Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's program. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touch-tone phone. Please note this call may be recorded, and I'll be standing by should you need any assistance. It's now my pleasure to turn the call over to Jamal Simmons. Please go ahead.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for being on the call. We are going to go ahead and get started. We have joining with us today, we have Dan Lowson, who is the director of the Center for Civil Rights Remedies, a new initiative at the Civil Rights Project at UCLA. Dan has worked with the Civil Rights Project since 1999 when it was affiliated with Harvard Law School, where he'd been a lecturer on law, and he works concerning the impact, his work concerns the impact of law and policy on children of color and language minority students, including the reauthorization of ESEA with a focus on promoting diversity, access to effective teachers, and improving graduation rate accountability, and several other important policy initiatives. Mr. Lowson taught in the public schools for 10 years, including work as a school founder of an alternative public school. I'm going to turn it over to Dan, who will give us an overview of the report. The report should be, you should have it in your email box now from or at least the press release you should have in your email box, and the report is now should be live at the Center, the Civil Rights Project website. So we will get started now with Dan.
So before I go into giving the highlights and trying to answer the question of what is sort of most surprising or most newsworthy, I think it's really important to understand some of the just nitty-gritty in terms of what these calculations all represent. First of all, the sample came from approximately 7,000 school districts across the nation. They were collected by the U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights. We have in the spreadsheet that's on our website, you can see the actual numbers of students that go into these calculations. But all these numbers are calculated as the risk for being suspended out of school at least one time. So it's important that folks realize none of these kids are from the group that were in school suspended, nor do they represent kids who were expelled. And it's important that we're looking at suspensions and not expulsions, because it's expulsions that are typically the most serious kinds of misbehavior, you know, assaults on teachers, kids who bring guns to school or drugs to school. Typically those students are expelled and not suspended. We know from other studies and reports that most suspensions, in fact, are meted out for less serious offenses from truancy, tardiness, dress code violations, foul language, than vague ones like defiance or disrupting the class, a whole range of disruptive behavior. There are also fights, too, but again, not the most serious ones that involve real violence. All the calculations in the report describe the number of students suspended at least one time. In other words, if 10 students out of 100 were suspended during the course of the year, but some of these were suspended two and three times, the total number of suspensions would be quite larger than just 10. But we're only counting each student, so there were only 10 students suspended. So these are numbers of students and not the suspensions or not the incidents. All the data are expressed as a percentage of that group's enrollment. So when we're talking about all kids, if there are 10,000 students enrolled and 20% of all students were suspended, that would be one out of every five students enrolled, approximately in K through 12. So in that case, it would be 2,000 students. And again, you can find the actual numbers in the spreadsheet, but we just stick to describing them as the percentage of their enrollment. So if it's 20% of the black children were suspended, that means we looked at the black enrollment to get that percentage. It's not the percentage of the suspended students. It's their percentage of their total enrollment in the district. So 33% of Latino kids would mean one out of three Latino children enrolled K through 12 was suspended. At the national and state level, our findings are based on the sample. I already mentioned that. So now I'd like to walk you through our key findings and tell you what was particularly surprising. And I think just to begin with, just the sheer number of students that were suspended at least one time, we estimate over 3 million children were suspended at least once. That's enough to fill every NFL football stadium and every major league ballpark in the country. And I always find, you know, one of the first charts we provide shows the breakdown by the different racial groups. And it's, to me, it doesn't stop to shock my sensibility when I see that 17% or one out of every six black children, this is K through 12, based on their enrollment, were suspended out of school at least once. That's across the nation. Most surprising, though, because I've been looking at these sorts of data for many years, the most surprising was that 25% of black children with disabilities, one out of every four, that means, in the nation, suspended at least once during 2009-10. And for this population, kids with disabilities, many of you may know, are supposed to be, if they have behavioral issues related to their disability, they're supposed to be getting extra counseling, special education supports and services, require that kids with behavioral issues have behavioral assessments, and in their plan they get a behavioral improvement plan. And this is part of their right to a free and appropriate public education. But so this number suggests that there's something very, very amiss with regard, and we found, you know, high suspension rates for every racial group for those kids with disabilities, typically double compared to their non-disabled peers. So that was pretty disturbing. But it gets worse, and one of the reasons we structured the report the way we did is the real important information is at the district level. But as you drill down, we see at the state level, really huge differences in the use of suspension, but also we looked at the racial gap between black and white children. And in Illinois, for example, there was more than a 21% point difference in the use of suspension for black kids compared to white kids. So that means that one out of every four blacks statewide, 25.3% throughout the state, K through 12, were suspended at least once, compared to less than one out of every 25 white students. We were equally surprised to see the wide range, though, of suspensions. There were five states that had almost no racial gap between blacks and whites. And of these five states all were suspending about 4% of all students. So this idea that, you know, we have to be suspending kids is really flies in the face of this kind of information. State and national estimates tend to show less disparities because they're grouping all these districts together. And so the real story, I think, is at the district level. The other thing that is not revealed here, but we hope to do further analysis, is to get down to the school level and talk about what's going on in middle schools and high schools, because typically those rates are going to be even higher. I mean, these district rates cover K through 12, and elementary schools typically don't suspend nearly as high numbers or percentages of their enrollment as middle schools and high schools. So we found nearly, looking at all these districts together, nearly 200 districts suspended one out of every five students, 20% of their enrollment. That was really surprising. And on the other side, it was also surprising to find thousands of low suspending districts where 3% or less of their enrollment were suspended. And 3% is somewhat arbitrary, but I looked at what was the average white suspension rate in the early 70s, and that was approximately 3%. And so this notion that we've moved away from using suspension as a measure of last resort, what this really reveals is there are many districts where that still is the rule, but there are many districts, far too many, where they have gone so far from that sort of standard that it just, for me, it just shocks the consciousness. There are high suspension rates for whole kids, for example, when we looked at the district, that are just incredibly high. For example, Latino kids in Hartford, Native American kids in Spokane, Washington, white kids in Miami Unified in Arizona, where almost half of those groups' enrollment, K through 12, were suspended out of school. And then for black students, it's even worse. Places like Pontiac, Michigan, and East Jasper, Mississippi, where more than 6 out of every 10 black students were suspended at least once, K through 12. But again, we did the same sort of analysis. For each racial group, we looked to see, well, how many districts were suspending 3% or less? And for each of those racial groups, we found thousands of districts where they were suspending 3% or less, where they had at least 10 kids of that racial group enrolled. So finally, there are large and high suspending districts. You know, you can find them in every state. One of the, I think, incredible pieces of this report is really found in the spreadsheet. So anyone now can go and find the information on their district. If it was included in the OCR sample, they can compare them to other districts in their state, or they can compare them to districts throughout the country. They can look for rates for kids with disabilities. They can look at rates by race. The gender data we weren't able to digest in detail, but we do have some of that digested in the last chart, where we see, again, for male students with disabilities, the highest rates, especially high for Black students, Latino students, and Native American kids with disabilities, often a third or more in some of these large urban districts, or they're not just urban, some of them are rural, but among the largest 100 districts, we organized them for all kids by high suspending and looked at 10 of them and broke those data down by race, gender, and disability. And what you'll see is just some incredibly high rates that really suggest that there's something wrong, something more that the district should be doing that they're not doing. And so the discussion section of the report reviews the research on that issue. Is this something that is inevitable, or is this really a reflection of school policies, practices, that sort of thing? And there I point, I think, at the most robust study to date was performed by the Council of State Governments Justice Center, where they tracked a million middle school kids, every middle school kid in Texas, for 6 years. And they were able to control for race, for poverty, for the size of the school district, all these different things. And they found within school districts, they found when you control for these factors, a really wide variance in the use of out-of-school suspension. And they concluded that it was something about what the schools were doing. They didn't give specifics, but I think the inference is that school leadership, the training of teachers, school discipline policies and practices are what's driving these really high suspension rates. So it gives, I think, all of us the data that we present, and all of us should say we can reject the status quo, especially with other research findings, including from that same study, but also others. Dr. Skiba can talk about some of his findings, and also the American Psychological Association, the Academy of American Pediatrics, all have found that suspension, out-of-school suspension, can exacerbate problems. It really has no benefits. In fact, just the opposite. Suspending a student out of school is one of the leading indicators of whether students will drop out and wind up incarcerated. Some estimate that it increases the risk of dropping out by threefold. So are there alternatives? Yes. In the discussion section, I review several of these, everything from restorative justice, school-wide positive behavioral interventions and supports, social and emotional learning, training of classroom teachers and leaders, and better classroom management skills. And I can speak to these. I was one of those teachers who was sending kids to the principal's office right and left when I started, and I received the kind of training that I'm talking about in that discussion section. And by my 10th year, I was not ever suspending kids, never sending them to the principal's office. I had the skills, and I was also a much better teacher. So there's a lot that can be done. And I think, you know, the bottom line is we have to reject this frequent use of out-of-school suspension. We have to take a hard look at these incredibly high racial and disability disparities and just say, you know, we have to reject this as the status quo and say this is not educationally sound practice. There are alternatives. And I know as a teacher, a parent, and a researcher that we can and we must do better. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Now I'd like to introduce Dennis Parker, who is the director of the ACLU National Office's Racial Justice Program. He's going to speak for a couple of minutes, and we've got a couple of people coming after him. Dennis?
Thank you, and good morning. The Racial Justice Program of the National ACLU is dedicated to removing obstacles to full participation in American life and society. Chief among those obstacles is what we call the school-to-prison pipeline, the policies and practices which push children out of schools into the juvenile justice and the criminal justice systems. We're heartened by this report because it confirms what we've seen anecdotally in cases and in studies that we have done across the nation, and that is that exclusion from school has a severely detrimental effect on students of color and particularly students of color with disabilities. We have seen instance after instance where the result of exclusion was to, in effect, sentence children to dropping out of school, thereby increasing the likelihood that they will end up incarcerated or in the criminal justice system. We've seen that this happens in school districts across the country. We've seen the number of children who are affected. And we see that by doing that, we are denying the students the chance to achieve their potential. And we are denying society of the benefits of having students who are educated, who can participate in society and who can contribute to society. This is one of the most important things that we as a racial justice program do. And so we're pleased to see a tool that demonstrates the extent of this problem throughout the country. For too long, this has been an issue that has really been below too many people's radar screens. And we're pleased with the opportunity to look at this issue, to examine a lot of our assumptions concerning education, that the tools to do that are now possible. So we are pleased that we have this information. We are pleased that we're now able to quantify, to break it down by school districts, to look at racial and demographic breakdowns. And most importantly, we are pleased that this study suggests that it's not something that has to happen, that the gaps in discipline that we see for race and special ed students are not written in stone, that through intelligent research-based methods we can assure that all children, no matter their race, no matter their status as far as disabilities are concerned, can reach their full potential. And we urge that advocates, parents, and students, educators all get together to make sure that we educate all of our children.
Great. Thank you very much. And next joining us will be Diane Smith-Howard, who's an attorney at the National Disability Rights Network. Diane?
Thank you. Good morning. The National Disability Rights Network is a membership organization of the Protection and Advocacy Network, and there's a protection advocacy agency in every state which represents people with disabilities. We are the largest provider of advocacy services for people with disability in the U.S., and we handle thousands of suspension cases involving children with disabilities every year. And I just have to say that this report really confirms for us what we already know from our practice. For example, I practiced in Michigan, and my discipline caseload was African-American males with disabilities between the ages of 13 and 17. That was my caseload. And that is what we see nationwide. And so it's nice to have data that ties together the race and the disability piece. There have been prior studies that have looked at either issue, but haven't connected the two together. And I think this report is tremendously helpful in that way. In addition, it provides us data at the state and local level that we haven't had previously. And the spreadsheets, I think, will be tremendously helpful in guiding our work within the network of looking at policy changes. One of the things that I found most striking about the report was the statistic that an African-American male with a disability in Richmond, Virginia, has a 91.7% chance of being suspended. And I just think that really leads us to the idea that there's a mandate for change here. If some districts can suspend at a 3% rate, and yet other kids have almost 100% chance of being suspended during the time that they're in school, I think that really provides a wake-up call for us. And in addition, as the prior speaker was talking about, the connection to the school-to-prison pipeline is obvious. And common sense tells us that teenagers with idle time are not going to use that time uniformly in a positive way, and that is going to lead to juvenile justice referrals and kids dropping out of the school. And we know that other prior studies have connected the issue of suspension and the overuse of the suspension practice to the increase in referrals to the juvenile justice system. And alternatives do exist. There are well-meaning districts which are have the right attitude that all of these kids belong to us and they belong in school. And some of the districts that are profiled in the study that do a good job are not wealthy districts. And so we know that it doesn't have to be that way. So I think we're going to be using this report to make some very specific recommendations about changes at the local, state, and federal level. We're going to talk at the local level about recommending annual discussion of local data, revising the zero-tolerance policies and the school codes to really look at overuse of suspension for minor issues, that suspension will probably always be with us as a practice in certain cases, but it is being overused in certain districts because for very minor infractions. At the state level, I think regulatory reform like has happened in Connecticut and Maryland is something that districts can look at, states can look at in terms of limiting the overuse of the practice. And I think state departments of education should be providing greater oversight of districts that have high suspension rates to see whether the special ed laws are being complied with. Because as Dan Losa mentioned earlier, these kids have rights to a number of behavioral services that may help them be more successful in school. And then lastly, at the federal level, I think there is an increased need for the Office of Special Education Programs, OSEP, to monitor districts with high suspension rates, particularly of kids with disabilities, and consider maybe some demonstration projects to help provide better information about best practices and the districts that are doing a good job. Thank you.
Great, thank you. And our last two speakers are Russ Giba from Indiana University and Mo Green, who's the superintendent of Guilford County, North Carolina. Russ Giba is a researcher at the Center for Evaluation and Education Policy, and he can talk a little bit more about the report.
Yeah, hi, this is Russ Giba. I direct the Equity Project at Indiana University. We're a consortium of state, federally, and foundation-funded research projects looking at racial and ethnic disparities in school discipline and special education. This report, I want to say, is very consistent with our research knowledge of the last 20 years about suspension and expulsion. One of the drivers for increases in suspension and expulsion over that time period was the rise of zero-tolerance policies in the late 80s and early 90s. And as Dan mentioned, that was the outcomes of that were unexamined for a number of years. Finally, we had groups like the American Psychological Association do a major task force on that. And after looking at hundreds of documents and research reports over a year's period of time, the APA concluded that exclusion from school and zero tolerance have not made schools safer, have not shown evidence of improving school behavior of students, and have led to maintaining or increasing levels of racial and ethnic disproportionality. A couple of things that are important about this report. First of all, the extent of the use of suspension and expulsion, and also the extent of racial and ethnic disparity, are very much highlighted by the report. Second, the notion that this is not a phenomenon that we find universally across all districts, that there are, in fact, quite a number of districts in this sample that don't have high rates of use of suspension and expulsion. That gives one a sense that the use of suspension and expulsion is, in fact, a choice. And we know from other literature on principal attitudes toward discipline specifically that those schools in which a principal favors a more exclusionary approach are the schools that, in fact, lead to higher rates of suspension and expulsion, and I'll get back to that in just a moment. And then, of course, I think the third most important finding from this report has to do with issues, continuing issues of racial and ethnic disparities in the use of school suspension and expulsion. If you look at the breakdowns that this report provides by race, you'll notice that there's a disclaimer in each of those sections saying that this is not universal, that there's there are a large number of schools that don't have such high rates of suspension and expulsion. But you'll notice also as you move towards Latino and African-American findings that proportion of schools goes down. So, in fact, only one-third of the schools in this sample had that lower rate of suspension and expulsion. It's much more ubiquitous for African-American students. The last point that I think needs to be made is that I think there is a tendency to misinterpret data when we say that there are high rates of African-American overrepresentation. There is often a tendency to believe that that is due to either poverty that unfortunately it goes along with racial disparity in our country, or based on possibly based on higher rates of inappropriate behavior in the classroom. And it's important to recognize that the research has not supported either of those hypotheses, that we see these racial and ethnic disparities not only in our poor urban schools, but in our more well-resourced suburban schools. Our disproportionality is as high, or in some cases higher, in our suburban schools as in our urban schools. Nor does the literature support the idea that African-American students are misbehaving at a greater rate in the same schools or the same districts. If anything, the research seems to show that African-American students are punished more severely for the same behavior. In a study we did that was published just recently in School Psychology Review, the likelihood of suspension and expulsion across an entire national sample in 17 states, the likelihood of suspension for minor misbehavior was very low, but African-American and Latino students were 3 to 5 times more likely to be suspended for minor misbehavior. It's been a very consistent finding that that the rates of disruptive behavior are not totally responsible for racial and ethnic disparities. Bradshaw and her colleagues at Johns Hopkins University in their research have found that if teachers rate students on behavior and you control for teacher ratings, you still find that they tend to refer higher numbers of African American students to the office. And in our most recent research that was presented at the American Educational Research Association this past April, we found that poverty did not explain racial disparities. Type of behaviors did not explain racial differences in suspension and expulsion. What was most telling was, in fact, school-level differences and school-level characteristics. Things like principal attitude towards school discipline were, in fact, strongly predictive of racial disparities in school discipline. So in the long term, this report points us to the fact that we need to deal with this and that we need to increase the types of resources that Dan was talking about, positive behavior supports, social-emotional learning, so that schools have the resources they need to be able to implement those alternatives that some schools are already implementing in order to reduce the rate of exclusion from school, especially for our students of color.
Great, thank you. And now, to close us out, lastly, Maurice Moe Green, who's the superintendent of Guilford County Schools in North Carolina.
Good morning.
I'm sorry, and then we'll have Q&A right after this.
morning.
Guilford County Schools has approximately 73,000 or so students pre-K through 12th grade. When I started as superintendent in September of 2008, I did a listening and learning tour, really trying to understand what are the issues in our community as expressed by our broader community, as well as students, parents, educators. And what came back was a significant concern with certainly improving our academics, but also being sure that we address student behavior issues. And so we developed and launched our strategic plan in 2009 that basically decided to make character development equally as important as academics. We use a quote from Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. that says, intelligence plus character, that is the goal of true education. Our strategic plan has a number of goals and then strategies, and we wanted to really sort of measure how we're doing along the way. With regards to character development, we really felt like we needed to balance safety, perceptions of safety, and students being excluded or suspended from school and being removed from educational opportunities. And so we had a number of goals, one of which was a very clear focus on the number, trying to reduce the number of students who were being suspended out of school because of what we called non-courteous acts or non-compliance acts. These would be, as others have referred to, some of the more minor violations. Those violations were making up about 57% of our violations that resulted in out-of-school suspensions in 2008. And we really felt like, let's try to reduce that number over time. And so we said, let's have a 15% reduction in that category. We certainly were pleased to see that as we were going through the years from 2008-09 until this past year, we have seen significant reductions in that area, including this past year, down by 24% of in that area. However, as we continued to explore our data, it just kept coming back to us that there is something much more significant going on, both on the academic side as well as on this character development side, and that is that we are seeing an overrepresentation of African Americans, particularly African American males, in students who are not performing well in school, as well as conversely being suspended out of school in great numbers. And so we decided in 2011 to essentially start another project. That project is something we have since coined or named as the Achieving Educational Excellence for African American Male Students. Was a project that we said we really are going to try to do much more analysis of our data, begin to really understand the role that race itself is playing in the outcomes of our data, and then go about trying to come up with strategies that would be beneficial to all students, but in particular African American male students. And so we did a number of things. We developed a deployment team. We took them through shared experiences. This team that included both internal staff members as well as community members went through symposiums on implicit bias, undoing racism. We went to, we have locally the Civil Rights Museum. We went on toward that. We had a number of conversations around very difficult, important issues of race and what role race may play in the outcomes that we're seeing. We analyzed a lot of qualitative and quantitative data. We actually had sessions with our community where we engaged them on what are they sensing and seeing. And we had 15 focus groups that did that. We, in addition to that, decided that we actually needed to hear directly from African-American male students. And so we developed a student advisory team that has 17 high school African-American male students. They were assembled in October of 2011. They were encouraged to talk candidly about what was going on from their perspective, and we listened to that. As a result of all that information gathering, all of the listening that we did, we decided that we needed to now, rather than put something out, and we've got and can certainly talk about the programs that we have, like positive behavior support programs in our schools, decided that we actually needed to do deep work in a small number of schools. And so we decided to focus on three schools. We have, starting this year, 124. So this is a very small subset of our schools where we said we're going to do much more significant work to see if we can come up with some better results for our students. We've selected the three schools, and it's a feeder pattern of schools that includes an elementary, middle, and high school. We just last week took them through a two-day symposium and included national speakers as well as some local experts and our internal staff as well as community members and our students, having conversations about what we need to do in these three schools to dramatically change the outcomes with regards to suspensions and then obviously academic outcomes as well. The result of this is still obviously to be determined as we go through this process, but we feel like we are making a significant commitment to this work in a way that is beginning to recognize that there's something in our data that says we must look at race, that we cannot do what we've been doing and then not look specifically at race as part of that equation. Certainly, we've established now those three schools, having gone through the symposium, began to develop sort of their goals. We have goals for the three schools overall that we want to see occur over the course of the next 3 years. This is important work, and the more we can get research like the report that's being released today, that can inform our work, the better I think we as a school district will be, both short-term and then certainly long-term for our students.
Great. Thank you very much. So, Alicia, can we open up the call for any questions that may be out there?
Certainly. And at this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. And once again, to ask a question, it's star and one.
Russ,
yes,
can you mute your phone, please?
Okay, thank you.
Okay, no. I'm sorry.
Sorry, thank you
Go
for
ahead.
Taking my call. This is all very startling data. I just wanted to ask if you could give an example. You've mentioned several times the kind of role models that we might look at as the districts that are not suspending at such high rates. And looking over the report, you talk about some of those districts where representation by African American or Latino students is very, very low. Like I think for the Latino students, you talked about in districts with enrollment of 3, as little as 3, and for African Americans, enrollment as little as 10. I'm wondering how statistically significant some of those districts would be. But to follow on from that, I wondered if you could give an example of, say, a district with low income demographics that has a low-level suspension, and conversely, a more affluent suburban district that has high level of suspensions, to the point that I think Dennis from the ACLU made.
So when we when
is
the
is this
office
Daniel
of,
talking?
This is Dan Lawson. Yes.
Okay.
So the short answer is I can't answer that question because we did not perform that level of analysis. But the districts that are highlighted in the national report, the print version, we put filters on so that there would be at least 100 students from the subgroup, that they came from districts where there are at least 1,000 students, and that they represented at least 2% of the overall enrollment of that district. So there are no districts that we highlight as high suspending for a racial group that had only few students from that racial group.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if you go to the spreadsheet, we included all the districts in the sample and analyzed all the data. But you can find the enrollment data if you scroll to the side. So there's no issue of the ball being hidden. We applied the exact same analysis to all the districts and provide both the percentages and the enrollment data. So it would be, I think, an interesting study. But it's really important that where they did have that data and they did look at demographics and did control for the poverty of the district, the size of the school, and those sorts of things, they control for all those factors throughout the state of Texas, where they had data on every middle school student. They found, in fact, when you controlled for race and poverty, not just of the student but of the district, that within the same district, there were wide variations in the use of out-of-school suspension. And they concluded, and that was one of the most profound findings from that report, and they concluded that there is a lot that is going on at the school level that is contributing to the use of out-of-school suspension. And I think in Guilford County, perhaps Dr. Green can also answer that, because I know there, I think it's like 50% or more of the total enrollment in Guilford County are kids with free and reduced lunch. And certainly Guilford County has a lot of work to do, but I can also say that within the districts, North Carolina, they are not among they were somewhere in the middle. They're certainly not among the high suspending districts, and that's a tribute to the ongoing work that they've been pursuing. I mean, they are a district that I am aware of because I did some work in 2005 there, working with a superintendent who's now in Houston, and they were consciously looking at their data and discussing pursuing different things that they could do to reduce their rates of out-of-school suspension. So that's the best answer I can give to your question.
I guess the one question, though, about the when we talk about, say, at least a third of the total districts had low levels of suspension, some of those districts may have had so few black students in them as to it would be statistically insignificant.
Well, there had to be 10 students, at least 10 students
right.
enrolled for that.
That doesn't seem like a very high number, that's all.
Well, we just said we only wanted to make sure that we weren't looking at districts where there are no students from that group. So, and we did it for each racial group. So I don't understand, you know, some may have had 10, some may have had 1,000. And I think the point is that there are districts, there's nothing about being black that would suggest that you should be suspended out of school. So the point is that there are districts that do serve kids of color that don't suspend that don't have high suspension rates overall, but also don't have high suspension rates of any of these subgroups.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Yes, we have two more. We'll take our next question from Nervi Shah with Education Week newspaper. Your line is open.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I had a couple of questions. One, I noticed that D.C. wasn't included in this list, and I just wanted to make sure I did understand the white-black, the gaps for each state. I want to make sure – I know, Dan, you explained that at the beginning, but I want to make sure I really crystal clear knew what exactly you meant with
– Sure. So we didn't include – we only included states.
Okay.
And the District of Columbia isn't a state. It is in the spreadsheet as a district. And it does inform the national average, but we didn't list it as a state. The numbers that you see in the spreadsheet, we took all the districts that are in the sample, and to the far right of that particular spreadsheet, it tells you for that state what percentage of the students in the state enrollment are represented in the sample. There's an asterisk by Wisconsin and next to Maryland, because we did some data checks in some of the districts that we were featuring. In other words, if you see the name of a district highlighted in one of the tables, we did some. One of the background stories here is that most states don't provide any information disaggregated by race or disability status on the use of suspension.
Mm-hmm.
So in most cases, we weren't able to compare to anything. But there are some states where they do have very good data, and one is Maryland and the other is Wisconsin. There are a few others. Texas is another. And so before we highlighted a district from one of those states, we were able to compare apples to apples for the same year, unduplicated, you know, suspension risks. And there, in one district in Maryland, and there might be another, we found a very large difference. Like the rates that were reported by OCR to the public were twice as high as those in Charles County. And in Wisconsin, Milwaukee, their rates were about half as low. So Milwaukee, Wisconsin suspension rates are probably twice as high as what they reported to the Office for Civil Rights. So if you go to the state website, you can find incredibly high rates of suspension. And since we couldn't say which was correct, we just knew that probably the one we had was wrong, because in Milwaukee, those suspension rates have been publicly reported for like 5 or 6 years running and are available to the public. And we've, you know, our sense was that those data were probably more reliable because they do more audit checks at the state level. So that's, I think, hopefully that I'd be more than willing to go into more detail after.
Oh, no, I just want to make sure I get characterizing when the black-white percentage gap that's listed for each state. I just want to make sure I'm describing.
Oh, yeah,
that.
So I'm sorry. Okay. So it's really, for each group, we looked at their suspension of their own enrollment. So it, and then subtracted one from the other. So 25% minus, I think it was 4% was a 21% gap.
Okay.
In other words, that's a huge difference considering that it's only 2 percentage points in some of the states at the bottom of that list.
Okay, so would it really be a percentage point gap then as opposed to a percentage gap? Like,
it's a percentage point gap, and if it doesn't say that in a text, that's on me.
No, that's fine. And my very last question, sorry, I don't mean to monopolize, is in some of the districts that are listed like for high rates of black student suspension, for example, like Pontiac City, they happen to be a majority minority district, so
right.
Student. So how does that sort of?
So I think there's a general confusion that's really important, and that's why I went over the.
Okay.
This is not comparing to the pool of kids who are suspended.
Okay.
So if 90% of the kids in a district were black, you would expect 90% of the kids who are suspended to be black.
Right.
But you wouldn't have any. They could have suspended 10 kids, 100 kids, a million kids. You wouldn't know how many kids were suspended or what percentage of their enrollment.
Okay.
You would just know of the kids who were suspended, whatever that number was, 90% of that number were black, and you would expect 90% enrollment to get. Now, if you are 90% of an enrollment of a district, your suspension rate, if it's a low suspending district, could be 1% or 2%. And so the fact that in a really high, racially isolated school district, they are suspending, you know, what was it for Pontiac? 4 out of every 10 children, K through 12, were being kicked out of school. That means you, if you assembled all the students who went to school in that district, kindergarten on up, you could point every fourth kid you point to would have been suspended at least one time.
Okay.
So that is tremendously different and really suggests a much bigger problem. If you only were comparing to their portion of enrollment compared to their portion of suspensions, you wouldn't be able to tell whether it was high suspending or low suspending.
Okay. So there's 67.5% for black students. What does that represent then?
So that's 67
uh-huh.
out of every 100 black students enrolled
okay.
were suspended at least one time. It's incredibly high number.
Okay, wow. Okay. Okay, gotcha. Thank you so much.
That's why it's so shocking.
Okay. Thank you.
But could I just jump in here?
Sure.
On something that I think addresses both that question and the previous question from the New York Times. I think hello?
Please identify yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Russ Skiba.
Okay.
Yes. The fact of the matter is that I think Dan's numbers and both the original question, the first question, really get back to the ubiquity of racial disparities in suspension and expulsion. We see that, as Dan said, most strikingly in some urban districts, but we actually see that in a variety of districts. There is a body of literature right now that's looking at the relationship between the racial and ethnic makeup of a school and the use of more punitive approaches like suspension and expulsion, and finds out that in general the higher proportion of African-American students, the more likely a school is to use more exclusionary and punitive measures. Now, what's very striking about that research, it's similar to what Dan was talking about with the CSG report. What's very striking about some of that research is that it controls for demographics, so that even in our more suburban, lower poverty schools, the number of black students is still predictive of the amount of punishment and exclusionary approaches that you see. I think this really says that this is a very widespread issue that needs very serious attention, and I think calls for it really reinforces the types of programs that Superintendent Green is talking about, things that where a district says if there are racial disparities, we have an issue of race, and we need to look directly at that and find ways to address that issue.
Great, thank you. I think we have one more question.
Yep, we'll take our final question from Joel Hood with the Chicago Tribune. Your line is open.
Hi, guys. Thanks. Interesting data. Can any of you there talk just a little bit more about the data we're seeing from the state of Illinois? There seems to be an unusually large discrepancy between African-American and white students in the suspension rate. Have you guys identified any factors of why that might be the case?
Hi, this is Dan Lawson.
Mm-hmm.
So we did not take the next step,
mm-hmm.
but we hope that we might, and we hope that other researchers will, which is to say, in a place like Chicago, try to understand what is going on. Now, in a couple of these places, Connecticut, for example, in 2008, they actually passed a law that said that they were going to use suspension now as a measure of last resort, and that for most offenses, kids had to be suspended in school. And that law didn't really get implemented until 2010-11. But now we're entering the 11-12 is in the book, so the 09-10 data may not reflect, you know, changes since then.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, I think it would be really important to try to understand what is going on, especially in Chicago. I do know that in around 2000-2001, at one point, there was a set of board meetings in Chicago where they were projecting suspending more kids every year. Now, I can't, unfortunately, find this for you. So, and I'm not saying that this necessarily contributed to the actual rates that we're seeing, but
mm-hmm.
there may be in Chicago, as there before that there have been in other cities, there may be have been an attitude that they had to get tough on kids and clamp mm-hmm. down. We did see, for example, the reverse trend in Baltimore, where Superintendent Andres Alonso came in, and within a couple of years, he reduced the really high suspension rates in Baltimore. And a couple of things he did, he said, we will not suspend kids for truancy or tardiness or dress code violations. And there may be some others. So similar to what Dr. Green said that they tried to eliminate in Guilford
mm-hmm.
County, eliminating some of these what I call low-hanging fruits where, you know, how is it a deterrent to suspend a kid who's truant or tardy? Kids who don't want to be in school and are acting up in mild ways, kicking them out of school is actually a reinforcer. And other studies have suggested that for a lot of these minor misbehaviors, you may be just exacerbating the problem and increasing disengagement. So
mm-hmm.
there have been cases where large district superintendents have dramatically, in just a few years, reduced the use of suspension by tens of thousands. And they're still working at it. They still have zero tolerance for drugs and guns. But they also said any suspension of more than 5 days had to go through the central office. They engaged in training of their principals as well as their teachers, and they made a lot of progress, and their graduation rates went up. So
mm-hmm.
I can't speak specifically to what is happening
Illinois.
In Chicago, but I do.
This suspension data, though, this refers specifically to out-of-school suspensions?
Out-of-school suspensions.
Okay.
That's right.
And have you guys seen sort of a general...
Not expulsions. What's
not
that?
Expulsions, right. Have you guys seen sort of a general trend nationally to minimize or to do away with some of the minor offenses that result in suspensions, or is that just happening in isolated large districts?
Well, as I mentioned, not only did Connecticut pass a law, in Maryland, for the state of Maryland, has also issued new regulations just approved, although not finalized, last month, where, again, they said not only would they tell all districts to change their policies so suspension is reserved as a measure of last resort, but also they're trying to reduce the racial disparities to zero within 3 years. There are 8 bills before the governor's desk, or that are expected to reach the governor's desk in California. One of those, for example, would say if a district is suspending more than 25% of its enrollment of any group, they would have to engage in interventions, and they have a whole set of different things to try to reduce their use of suspension. In Massachusetts, we just passed, Governor Patrick just signed a law that would give a little bit more due process protection before kids are suspended out of school, and would require better data reporting on the district level, broken down by disaggregated data, but that won't be in effect for another 2 years. So that, and also nationally, we had Eric Holder and Secretary Duncan come together and address the nation and to say that there is a major problem with the use of out-of-school suspension, and launched an initiative to gain some consensus about what can be done about it. And also the Office of Civil Rights is saying that they're going to enforce disparate impact regulations and are taking some real steps to address, at least in isolated places, the use overuse of suspension, especially as it affects kids of color and kids with disabilities. So I think we're turning the corner. But we haven't fully turned it yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Hi, this is Russ Skiba. I just wanted to note that there has also been a change in Chicago's discipline policy. Their new code of conduct was just passed in June by the school board there, and I believe it takes some pretty significant steps in the direction Dan is talking about. They're talking about reducing their 10-day suspensions to 5-day suspensions, their 5-day suspensions to 1 to 2-day suspensions, and really emphasizing and highlighting the importance of positive behavior supports in developing a safe school climate. I'd suggest talking with their safe schools director there, Jennifer Loudon.
Okay, great. Thank you all very much. If there are no more questions?
No, there are no more at this time.
Great. Thank you all for being on the call, all the reporters for being on the call. We look forward to reading your story soon, and, of course, we'll be in touch when there are new things that come out from the Center and from the Civil Rights Project.
Thank you on behalf of the Center, too, for joining all of you.
This concludes today's teleconference. You may now disconnect and have a great day.